Recently, we discussed the hypocritical attack on Donald Trump, who committed the great American sin of telling the truth. You know, in that case about the conditions of Baltimore and that, you know, how the city is so terrible and crime rate and it's a dump and it, you know, smells like rats. I asked a question about what could be done, but there was no time for a discussion like that. You said it would take too long. So I'm asking again, Baltimore, the decline of the Western society, what can be done? There's got to be something other than name calling.
Yeah. My old friend Murray Rothbard, the great libertarian philosopher, he used to make fun when he'd hear hand-wringing lefties, whenever they were confronted by some social problem, like, I don't know, teenage acne or shooting in the streets, they would say something like, "We cannot stand idly by while you whatever." While all these problems goes on, like somehow you could solve a problem. And Murray would say in his inimitable New York squawk, "Why can't we? Why can't we stand idly by?"
It's no argument that the cities, much like Baltimore, Oakland, St. Louis, Chicago, Los Angeles, a host of cities are in deep trouble with a terrible plight of homelessness and tent cities, drug abuse, and the cities just completely declining. But you're smart, and I have my moments, and people that are in politics should be sort of smart. There must be something that can be done.
Well, you know, the big questions in life mostly have to be left unanswered, and there's no solution to the big problems, at least no solution that anyone is prepared to listen to seriously. Usually, the solutions that people attempt, especially that governments attempt, cause greater evils than the problem they're designed to solve. I mean, Tacitus, writing about the period of the early Roman Empire, talked about all the problems, and he said, but the remedies were worse than the disease itself.
Oh.
Insight. You know the old song, "I knew an old lady who swallowed a fly"? Why in the world did she swallow a fly?
Right.
I know she swallowed a spider. Right. You know,
Exactly.
Eventually, she was an old lady who swallowed a horse. She's dead, of course.
Right.
So that is the history of social legislation in America.
Okay, well, your mission, Mr. Phelps, should you decide to accept it, your mission impossible, the impossible dream, if we were in charge, if we were the king of the world, king of the world, what could we do?
Yeah, children's book title, is it Maury Sendak, If I Ran the Zoo? And this world is a zoo. Well, I sometimes compare the condition we're in to that of a man who goes to the doctor and says, "Doc, I got these headaches. I don't know what to do." And when the physician asks him about the bloody bruises and wounds that are all over his head and neck, the patient explains that, well, he's got a theory that by hitting himself in the head with a hammer, he's curing his anxieties and it's going to prolong his life. But what, Doc, what can I do about these headaches? Well, the doctor says, quit hitting your head with a hammer.
Okay.
So, for example, take something unrelated. Look at education, although that's not entirely unrelated because the schools in cities are a particular mess.
Right.
Until about 1920, American high schools, public and private, were turning out graduates who were ready to go to work, or if they had money, talent, and desire, they were ready to go to college. Our educated classes shared common knowledge and interests. I mean, a doctor could talk to a lawyer, could talk to a teacher, could talk to a minister. That's not true today. They all knew something of the classics. They'd learned at least some Latin. They studied some ancient history. They had common ground. They could use their own language and write and speak effectively. That's all gone. It's amazing the way English is used today. Today, basically, none of this is true, but if you tell somebody, well, let's just go back to the point at which it all went bad, namely about the time of World War I when schools were giving up Latin and the classics, they'll shake their heads. You can't reverse history. You simply can't go back.
Are you saying that at one time in history, at least on the education level, that everything was pretty kosher? Are you saying that functioned once and that it was doing its job as the American educational system. I sort of find that hard to believe,
well,
actually.
It is true. Even people who grew up in the 20s and 30s in the afterglow, they remember how it was. I talked to a nice lady I knew in Rockford who, hard as it is to believe, she's 20 years older than I am, and she remembered getting a pretty decent education. And in the same way, American cities, they weren't perfect any more than American schooling was perfect, because you don't seek perfection in everyday life. But in this, which is the real world, where there is no city on a hill, no shining city, where there is no perfection, we're not living in the kingdom of God. We're living, we got kicked out of Eden a long time ago. But once upon a time, cities around the world, from ancient Athens and Rome and smaller towns to medieval Italian towns and French towns, all the way down to places like New York, Boston, Philadelphia, Chicago, they functioned. They were vibrant places that people wanted to go to. There was the nightlife, there were symphonies, there were all sorts of things.
Well, something must have happened. Some breach, some break, some huge deal that it just broke off, and now it started to shatter and fall into 1,000 pieces.
Yeah.
What happened?
Well, a number of things happened simultaneously. First, we had massive immigration into the United States between roughly the period after the American Civil War and the end of World War I.
Is this legal immigration or illegal?
Mostly legal, but we didn't really have immigration law, so if you could make it, you could come.
Oh, okay.
And this massive immigration swamped the ability of cities to manage themselves to cope with their problems. First of all, a lot of the immigrants couldn't speak English, and those who did speak English, the Irish, were on a very low level of education, very poor health, impoverished. They were dragging down the educational system, the welfare system, everything. And these ethnic groups spawned criminal gangs on a level and a type with violence and criminality that we hadn't dealt with this until that time. But even so, left alone, without the benevolent hand of government telling them what to do, immigrants began to assimilate by the second generation. Things weren't perfect, but things were working. It's like American City was like a body that had been hit by a disease, but its immune system was closing in and healing it. So, to prevent the process of healing, progressive welfare programs were designed to keep people in poverty and resentment and hostility. But these policies could only retard, but not entirely reverse the process. People naturally, unless there are strong disincentives, will always try to provide a better life for their children.
Of course.
So to make sure that the cities would completely crumble, we needed to subsidize negative behavior. We needed to pay for illegitimate children, pay people not to work, give them free needles for junkies and free condoms for fornicators. Mm. Also, what we needed were special policies aimed at the poorest elements.
Okay.
Southern blacks, for example, who went north, Latino American immigrants, they had to be made to feel special and be the beneficiary of government policies. A double standard was imposed on whether you would arrest somebody if you were white but not for black, or we just didn't expect the same things out of minority communities. Affirmative action guaranteed that people two levels below the norm would get hired if they had the right skin color and background. When cops enter a minority neighborhood in the 1950s to enforce the law, they were called bigots. It was called police brutality. And this is worse now than it used to be. When hoodlums burned down Watts in Los Angeles or rioted and burned down Detroit, nothing effective could be done. There was a book that came out, a brilliant book about 1970 called The Unheavenly City by Edward Banfield, a great sociologist. And one of his chapters is called Rioting for Fun and Profit. And he shows that in the Watts riot and in other so-called race riots, that the main goal was to loot stores and have a good time, and that it had nothing to do with racial inequality.
That sounds like that one official said, we're going to give these guys plenty of room to be able to destroy property and
do
what they want to do. It was such a crazy statement to me. I could not believe that she actually said it. You know, but this brings up the idea, you know, and I'm throwing you a curveball here, but the poor you have with you always. We definitely have responsibility to take care of the poor. Is that not true?
Well, who is we? We have a moral responsibility to take care of the poor that we are confronted by, the poor in our own family, the poor in our neighborhood, the poor in our community. The scriptures say nothing about devising government systems that is set 90% of their money goes to middle class college-educated people.
I see. It's the government's input that kind of messes everything.
Socialism says you rob Peter and you don't actually give it to Paul, you give it to yourself. It's the Jesse James version of Robin Hood.
Okay,
you know.
I see. All right.
I steal from the rich and I keep it. When a city tries to act since the 1960s, tries to repress crime, tries to crack down on rioting, the first thing you've got are federal lawsuits. You've got state and federal agencies stepping in and slapping them down and calling the local officials bigots, racists, Neanderthals.
Well, hold on, Mr. Phelps. We were doing the Mission Impossible scenario. In our dream scenario, there must be a solution. You've identified the problem for years and years and how it's gotten bigger and bigger, and the old lady that swallowed a fly is now about ready to swallow a horse. What's our solution, our dream solution?
Okay, the same solution as exists in education and in everything else. For example, I once ran a private school for they were country kids. They were not, their parents had none of them gone to college virtually, and I made them study Latin, history, a real old-fashioned curriculum, and kids who had no member of their family ever go to college for 10 generations were getting college scholarships. There was no secret. I just went back to something like the curriculum of 1920, and these kids were doing brilliantly on testing.
You monster.
Yeah. So in my dream scenario, we have to quit hitting ourselves in the head with the hammer.
Oh,
we have
right.
to end affirmative action and the double standards of behavior that exist. We have to start doing the little things like policing the streets and don't let people throw trash. Don't let public obscenity be. Don't let women be harassed on the street as they're walking by. All of these little things. We end subsidies that pay for women to have illegitimate children, that pay for junkies, that pay for psychotics, that pay for people engage in criminal behavior. Hmm. We are subsidizing the very behavior that we say that we're trying to control.
Couldn't we, as I have said before, people don't resist change, they resist being changed. Couldn't we just kind of back it down over a 2 year
sure.
or a 3 year period? Maybe start decreasing the money.
Cut it 10%. You know, years ago, the great economist Northcote Parkinson, Jimmy Carter asked him, what would you do to make America a better place and make government more efficient? He said, cut 10% out of the budget every year for 5 years. You know, when you're down to 50%, then look around for waste and spoilage and corruption,
mm-hmm.
because something like 80% of your budget is spent on junk. So, yeah, we could cut it out.
So the first thing you do is get rid of all that kind of affirmative action.
Yeah,
does that include welfare?
Of course.
Oh, okay.
Of course. Now, then we have to tear down the housing projects, make people find their own places to live, places where they choose, and we don't house them together in like these huge penal colonies where they prey upon each other. Preferably, if they're not being handed out welfare, they're going to go someplace where they might be able to get a job or at least scratch the ground and make a living out of it.
Okay, what about the people that are mentally ill? What kind of responsibility do we have to the mental? And they're blaming the homelessness and so forth on the mentally ill.
Yeah, well, you know, first of all, there didn't used to be these large numbers of mentally ill, drug addicted, alcohol dependent people. First of all, because their behavior in public that is now encouraged and subsidized was not tolerated. Each city and county and township and neighborhood should be allowed to find its own solutions.
Well, I don't think we're going to be able to wind the clock back.
Of
I don't think
not.
People are going to buy into that. And I don't think that people are going to accept our Mission Impossible solution.
Of course. Look, one of the problems is cities are a cancerous growth. Mm. The number of people, the percentage of Americans living in cities now is vastly out of proportion to what it had been. And one of the reasons for that is huge amounts of government money are funneled into cities in the form of government jobs, in the form of welfare programs, in the form of the distribution of largesse. So hence, what are the biggest cities in the world? Places like Mexico City. Why are all those people in Mexico City or Rio de Janeiro? And the answer is because the government brings them there.
Mm.
It puts out bait and attracts them. And
well, it's like
these
a
problems.
Hub of consumerism.
Yes, that's right.
You have tons and tons of people who need, and you have hopefully needs being met.
Yeah, so that's what you were saying.
Yes.
We need to undo just about everything we've been doing since the 1930s and then step back and see what happens. Then we've got to start cleaning up some of the messes.
Okay.
But people, as you say, people will not accept this. But you're forgetting that any program, if it is going to succeed, must include taking the vote away from anyone who depends on the government for his livelihood. This means that people who live off welfare, how dare they vote to tax us who work for our living in order to give them money? There's an old principle that no man may be the judge of his own case. The definition of that is tyranny.
Mm.
So you can't just say, well, I believe I'm innocent, or I believe that I'm worth another $10,000 a year. Imagine if no one on welfare could vote. And no public school teacher could vote. No social worker could vote. By the way, we'll get rid of them anyway. No prison official could vote.
There Nobody would be who chaos and rioting. It would be a total apocalyptic, biblical proportion. Dogs yeah. sleeping with cats. The most terrible thing. Fire from the ground splitting open. No, that probably won't fly.
You're too cheerful. Old Mayor Daley had the answer for that one. Remember during the 1968 convention, Democratic Convention in Chicago, and somebody said, oh, whoa, whoa, how are you going to handle it if they're rioting? He said, I've instructed the police to shoot to kill.
Oh, boy, that really wouldn't fly today, I tell you.
The question is, are we going to get back or not? You know, there's a move now in Illinois to kick Chicago out of the state.
I saw that.
And wouldn't that be wonderful?
They would be their own state.
I mean, they're it's two-thirds of the population of the state. They suck up all the money. Everything goes to Chicago. I don't go there anymore.
Even if it would work,
it's not going to happen.
It's pretty much impossible, Mr. Phelps. You have failed.
No.
Look, there's got to be an alternative, right?
We are a very sick people. There is no alternative. We have made ourselves sick. We have administered the toxins and poisons to us, become addicted to them. We're addicted to hedonism and sentimentality.
Oh.
Anytime anything happens, you have to hear about some poor minority, some poor homosexual, some poor transgender who hasn't been properly appreciated. And so because we feel so deeply compassion for people we've never met and don't even know their name, we are incapable of making the reforms necessary. And if we cannot find the will to stop taking the poisons that are killing us, we deserve to die, to have our society continue to corrupt and crumble the way it's been going on for my whole lifetime.